And welcome back to the First Cut Podcast with Kyle Porter. That's Kyle Porter. I'm Chip Patterson. Robbie Calland, Uproxx Sports, here. Robbie covered golf for CBS Sports. He has been a compadre of ours. Robbie, we also get to chat a little bit on the Puntcast. So thank you so much. We're excited about doing some episodes here on the First Cut, some three-man weave.
Yeah, man. I'm excited to get back in the golf game a little bit. I've missed talking about golf. You know, I haven't been able to play a ton recently.
You did play Sawgrass, though.
I did play Sawgrass last year, so I feel confident that I'm just dialed in on the course now. I shot a tidy 91, and I'm ready to pick some winners. But no, I think the one thing that I didn't appreciate about Sawgrass until I played it was how difficult it is to hold fairways there.
Yeah.
I didn't really know what it's like to play like one of those types of courses. Like I played East Lake and some of the like Atlanta area PGA courses, and like they're not real super tough. Like if you hit it in the rough, you're in trouble. But Sawgrass, I think the crazy thing was like you have to hit, there are like halves of fairways that you have to hit.
Damn.
Because if you don't, you're either going to roll into a bunker, which happened to me at least three times. I think I hit 8 fairway bunkers at Sawgrass. You're going to roll into a bunker, or you're just going to be stuck behind, like there's like palm trees that are just strategically placed in your way. It's way more of like, you know, you always kind of, I think as a viewer, you roll your eyes when they talk about the mental grind of Sawgrass. It's very real. Because, like, when you start hitting fairways and you think, oh, that was a great shot, and then it just rolls into a bunker and you have to play not to the green because you're behind a tree in a bunker.
Right.
That wears on you. When you thought off the tee, this is a perfect shot.
Kyle, have you played Sawgrass?
I haven't, but I agree with that. And I think in a lot of ways, Sawgrass has become a little bit underrated, and I think that like the problem is that everybody just freaks out about the 17th hole, and like I don't know, like there's just so much attention paid to that, but the course is like there's a lot of strategy that goes into it. I was stunned by that whenever I went. Them redoing, I think, what is it, 12? Redoing 12, and then just the finish when you get 15, 16, 17, 18, like. You have to hit like, I mean, like Robbie was saying, you have to be on a certain side of the fairway to have a good angle. And I don't know. I think until you see a course, you don't appreciate that in general, but especially so there.
Yeah. I mean, and I think part of it is, you know, the funny thing is I thought 17 was one of the, it was not intimidating.
Yeah.
Personally, yeah. Part of it was they were doing some construction, so you couldn't even see water. You can't even see the water over the back of the green.
Yeah.
So it doesn't even really feel like the island green. And I think part of that was the construction they were doing on the walkway. And so like they had like a barricade up on the back, like just like a little fence, and you couldn't see the water. So that kind of helped a little bit. It just felt like you were hitting over water. But also like, you know, you've got a pitching wedge or a 9-iron in hand if you're going to saw one off, and it's a big green. The hardest thing is finding the right tier of the green. Like I obviously there's a difference between me playing on a, you know, Friday afternoon and being there on the weekend at the Players with everybody around, but you know, like I think, like you said, everybody gets dialed in on the 17th, and yeah, but it's 135 yard shot. Most of these guys will be fine. It'll be interesting this week because wind should be up. I think that's pretty exciting and going to make the tournament. I think it's also going to make people appreciate Sawgrass a little more. Winds are supposed to be 10 to 15 pretty much all weekend. And I think that's kind of the way Pete Dye wants the course played. Because it isn't the longest course. It isn't but like that makes hitting those halves of fairways even tougher. That makes hitting, you know, those perfect shots even tougher, and moving it up brought the wind back into play a little more there. But yeah, I mean, like 18 for me was way more intimidating than 17. Standing on the 18th tee when all you see is blue,
yeah,
that's awful.
18 is insane. Rory was talking about that. Rory said that like 17 is nothing compared to the 18 tee shot.
No, 18 standing on the tee of 18, and I yanked one in the water.
Yeah,
and then as soon as you yank one in the water, like you don't get to drop anywhere because it's all water carry.
Yeah,
so it's not like you can be like, oh, I'll go drop up where it crossed. No, it crossed 10 feet in front of you. But
well, and the bailout there is like,
oh, it's in the trees.
Yeah, it's like an auto double bogey.
Yeah, no, that's so what I made. It's cool.
Like if you don't hit a perfect tee shot, you're making a six on 18.
So did you put the second one in the water?
No, I put the second one in jail in the trees.
Yeah.
And I hacked out to about 100 yards and like tried to get up and down. And that being the end of the day, you know, you talk about that mental grind and you talk about like, you know, you're sitting there and like number 10, like, oh, I hit a perfect tee shot. No, it's in a bunker behind a tree. You know, 12, like you're working. And then you get to 18, you're staying there. And you're like, really? This is what you give me to work with? There's this little, like, it looks, the fairway looks 5 yards wide from the tee.
Yeah, it does. It really does.
It's like, and if you're not willing to try to carry that little corner, you're going in the trees. Or you're hitting like 2 iron off the tee and laying back and have 220 in, which is not going to be a bargain to make par. Because that green's tough to hit anyway.
So what do y'all think winning score is going to be? Because I, Kyle, you kind of sent me down on this lane where it's like the PGA Tour is going to want birdies. The PGA Tour like wants to open this up. And after, you know, the compliments that we had for some tougher conditions and, you know, let me get out my wine and my handkerchief, the truer test that we sort of saw in the last two tournaments, like I kind of had prepared myself for like 19 under to be the winning score.
Well, there's a couple of different things working against each other here. And the first is that it's going to be like Robbie said, it's going to be a lot windier. And so I think conditions on these water holes are going to be, that's going to be hard. And Tiger was talking about, in addition to that, it's just, the course is just playing a lot longer in March than it does in May. He was talking about how he had to hit, I think it was like 3 wood, 3 iron into 18, whereas last year he hit like 3 iron, 9 iron or something like that. And so, but the flip side is that the rough isn't as high. You know, they've talked, Phil was talking about, they cut the rough down a little bit. So I don't know. I mean, historically speaking, March scores have been a stroke higher than the ones in May.
That's a good stat.
But I don't know. I don't know. I'm pretty intrigued to see what the winning score is. And I just think all of it depends on the wind. Like if it blows, I think scores will be up. And if it doesn't, then I think
you could see similar scores.
Yeah, I think you could see 20 under, wouldn't it?
So the prop at Westgate right now is 274.5. So 14 under would be under.
Yeah.
So they're looking for it to be up. Last year, Webb won at 18 and everybody else is at 14, mm-hmm, behind him.
Damn right he did.
He should have been at 21. He like tripled. But
he shot one over in the final round and shot 1800.
I know. It was crazy.
That was the most anticlimactic Sunday.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
He was up like 8 strokes coming in.
Yeah.
It was like, cool.
He almost made a 10 on 18 though.
He did.
It was terrible.
It was the worst rooting situation because he had been in so many, you know, the playoff loss in Phoenix to Hideki. Like he had been in a lot of those spots where it was there for the win and he had ended up like T2 or T3. So like there was this on Saturday night kind of creeping inevitability nervousness to the conversation among the Broughton High School faithful. But then quickly on Sunday, you're like, all right, no one is getting him. It's for sure in the bag.
Yeah. I didn't think Chip would be the first person to mention Hideki on this podcast.
That is an upset.
Yeah, I'm a little upset about that.
What's the president, founder, CEO, and CFO of the Hideki stock, Robbie Calland?
I think Sean Martin might have something to say about that.
Oh, that's right.
I was about to say Sean and I share an affinity for Hideki.
And Sean's listening.
Some of those titles. Hey, he's probably Sean. Been on it longer than I have.
Okay, that's good to clear the air because it's probably 2:30 a.m. in Sean's ears right now. He's with an infant, and he needs to know that his honor is.
Yeah. Whenever we're in the same room, though, there's Hideki talk.
I think
Kyle can attest.
I think Sean was deep in like the Japanese amateur game. So
yeah, that's why I'm saying he was probably on him early. Sean's probably on everybody early. Sean's seen some things. college, foreign amateur.
Yeah, for sure.
He's way more dialed up than any of us on that.
So you don't. Sean. Yeah, shouts to Sean. We know he knows circuits we've never dreamed of.
No.
What's your Hideki outlook for the players?
I mean, he's been playing fine. The flat stick's still not going. This is the same thing we've talked about with Hideki for 6 years now.
Yeah.
It all comes down to that. I mean, like, he's always – I always give him a chance on these tough courses, especially something like Sawgrass. We talk about you have to hit perfect shots. You have to be perfectly placed. If there's anybody that's able to do that, it's a guy like Hideki. The question is, can he roll in some 15-footers? It's always the question with him. It was the question at the PGA in 2016 when he couldn't make a putt over 4 feet, and I was there, and it was depressing. He shot like 68 on Saturday and didn't make a putt. You know, it's always that with Hideki. I think he'll be, you know, top 20. You know, he'll be lurking, but I think Sawgrass is one of those places you have to be able to roll in 15 to 20 foot birdie putts because you're going to have a lot of those. You're not. It's so hard to just stick stuff close at Sawgrass because so many times you have to just play the course. It's going to be somebody who can get hot with the flat stick, and that's usually not Hideki's game.
Matsuyama head to head for the tournament against Sergio Garcia. -120 for Garcia, -110 for Hideki.
I'd take Hideki there.
I'd take Sergio.
You like the Sergio outlook here? I've seen him high on people's, you know, scouting or power rankings.
Sergio at Sawgrass. He knows it.
Yeah, he's been playing a lot, but maybe I'm just juxtaposing like how badly he was playing to how well he's been playing recently. But I feel like he's been hitting it really well. He played pretty good in Mexico. Let's see, he was T9 at Honda, T6 at Mexico, T3 at Dubai. So he's got, you know, three top, what is that, top 10s and a DQ in his last
Yeah, I was going to say, so is this post temper tantrum?
No. The Honda and Mexico were
right.
Dubai was during, right?
Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. Dubai, he was T3, and then he lost his mind in Saudi Arabia.
That's right.
But yeah, no, I like him here. I don't know. I'm really intrigued to, and maybe I'm like overstating this. Jeff Shackelford did this thing about how like golf balls are sitting in the rough and how like you're not going to get as many buried lies when you're missing fairways as usual. And so I'm curious to see if that favors like the DJ JB Holmes, you know, Rory crowd.
Brooks.
And he's had some good finishes here too. So I don't know. Maybe,
he didn't shoot in the 60s until a 63 on Sunday last year.
Yeah, I know.
Backdoored like a 10th.
And maybe I'm overstating just like the course conditions. I just feel like that's the thing that I'm most intrigued by going in.
So with the idea being that why does it favor the Bombers with the way it sits? Elaborate on that just a little bit.
Well, I don't know.
Well, it's mostly you can feel a little more comfortable pulling a bigger club off the tee. And if it rolls through, then you can still get, you know, if you can get yourself in position to have 8-9 pitching wedge in.
And it, then it doesn't matter where it is. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
You're still going to be able to get clean contact. You're going to be able to stop the ball in the greens. I think that's the biggest thing about Sawgrass rough.
They're saying it's specific right now to the time of year and the way they've got it cut.
Yeah, right.
Because they can't really grow in the winter, and right. So they're not able to get it up or overseeded. You know, because now would be when you're kind of overseeding. But if you can't get it that thick, and so if you can get clean contact out of the rough, that means you can stop the ball in the greens. That's usually the issue at Sawgrass, is like the greens are always running super fast. They're usually pretty hard. And if you're hitting out of the rough, you have to be playing way short of the pin and letting it run out. And if you can throw it closer and stop it out of the rough because you're able to get cleaner contact, then that's an advantage.
And I think that like when you're like Robbie said, like when if you're in the rough and all you can do is hack it out, then everybody's sort of on the same playing field there, whether you're 340 or 290, you're still just like chipping out to like a spot. But if you're able to get some spin on it, stop it on what it sounds like are softer greens than normal, another thing that Tiger talked about is just like how the greens are so much slower and softer than they normally are, which I'm kind of disappointed in. I don't think that makes for like great championship level golf. But it might. And so that's the fear. Like it's just going to turn into like a
pin hunting,
a glorified, like memorial, right. where you're just like, and that's probably a bad example, like a glorified,
Jack coming for you.
Yeah, I don't know, like Phoenix Open, where you're just murdering it and then just trying to wedge up as close as you can. And I don't know. I think the thing that I like about Sawgrass is that it rewards guys that, I mean, Robbie Open talking about this, like rewards guys who can place the ball like in specific positions. And I'm curious to see if the rough being down and sort of these softer conditions take away from that. And produce. I mean, you're still going to have a great leaderboard because you have a great field, right? But I'm just curious to see how that affects kind of the way things play out.
Right. I think I'll be interested to see how much they do over the course of the week to maybe dry it out, depending on conditions, to kind of whether they cut and roll, to maybe juice it up for the weekend at least. I wouldn't be surprised if conditions kind of change as the week goes on.
Yeah.
In that regard, mm-hmm. A guy, if we're talking about bombers and we're talking, we love to say it, beware the injured golfer, Jay Day. Mm. If we're talking about guys that have a track record out of course of playing pretty well, guys that can send it off the tee, and, you know, he's obviously coming off the WD, a little trip to Disney to get the mind right. And, he says the back's feeling good.
Yeah. He said last week he had like a tear and a couple of like discs, and now he's like,
some slip disc type thing. Yeah. Now he's feeling good. Amped up.
I think I'm good, mate. Good to go.
He's got the same thing as, like a back that flares up right when it's time to like do some chores. Right. Like it conveniently lines up with the SEC on CBS 3:30 afternoon. Like,
laying on the couch with the heat pad.
Yeah.
I just gotta get it. It's tight, locked up on me.
I know that you wanted to take everything out of the china cabinet and put it all back in, but I'm gonna need to lay down for a while.
Oh my goodness.
All right. We will get into, of course, I mean, what is a golf podcast without mentioning expectations for Tiger Woods? We'll get into that plus our expert picks right after this.
I love a beautiful lawn. You love a beautiful lawn. Everybody loves a beautiful lawn, but they don't love how long it takes and how difficult it can be. And that is where True Green comes into play, because it's the easiest and most affordable way to get that beautiful lawn. Let's be real. You've got plenty of other things to do in your free time than focus on your lawn care. So let True Green take care of all of that hard work while you get to do everything else that you want to do. Like go play golf. Here's what you need to do. Visit truegreen.com. Okay. It allows you to do you. Let them do the lawn care. And if you visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, that is all guaranteed. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. It's truegreen.com. Get started now.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Tiger expectations here?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to expect. It's weird because I think when we talk about him or think about him having an injury, it's either been all or nothing, right? He's yeah. either been totally on the shelf or completely fine. And so I don't know how to feel about something that's like a 1 week thing. Yeah. You're like, well, is it a 1 week thing or is it longer term? Because my experience with you, my history with you is that everything is longer term, no matter what we say in the moment. Now, if you're talking strictly golf, I mean, I expect him to finish in the top 10. He finished T11 here last year, T10 at Mexico. So, like, all the, like, converging, you know, data points are that he'll play great. But I don't know. I'm not totally, like, convinced or in on him being 100%.
That's always the concern. And, like, you know, he'll talk a good game and he'll say, oh, I'm feeling good. And then on Sunday, we'll find out that he wasn't 100% or something like that. And I wouldn't bet on Tiger to win. Like, and they haven't even posted anything for like a top 10, top 20 odds on him. Cause I think the books are just as afraid of that as everybody else. So, yeah, I mean, like, if he's right, he's a top 15 here. Like, just pencil it in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he knows how to get around. If the rough's down, he's a guy that benefits a lot because, well, he's Tiger. He doesn't hit fairways.
Is Tiger the most high-floor golfer around right now?
If he's right? Yeah. I don't know if he's the highest floor. Like, I still think – I feel like healthy DJ is above him.
The highest floor right now, like this week?
Yeah.
I mean, I think Rory's floor is pretty high.
Rory does not have terrible tournaments.
Like he hasn't he's been an auto top 10 this year. Every tournament. Every you know, West Coast, Hawaii, wherever. Doesn't matter.
Well,
auto
top 10. Our active argument right now is that if just based on performance right now and the recent events, you could say Rory and Ricky are on top of the game.
DJ.
Oh, DJ.
Rory, Ricky, and DJ.
Yeah. Here's the thing though with Rory and DJ, and this is the thing that fascinates me about both Sawgrass and Sawgrass conditions this week is in the last, I think it's 3 years, Rory and DJ only have one combined top 10 at Sawgrass.
Yeah.
No, last 4 years. And it was Rory in 15. He finished T8, four strokes behind Ricky. And other than that, they neither of them has another top 10. And yet, they're the two co-favorites. They are maybe going to benefit the most from the course conditions, or maybe not. I don't know. Again, like I don't know how that's going to work, but those two I think are the most and they're also like two of the most appealing storylines for Augusta, right? Like if Rory wins Players, all of a sudden Augusta is just blown up, you know? Yeah. Like he's the favorite. Yep. Or if DJ wins Players. So I think that and Ricky, I think, is in that conversation a little bit as well, but not, I don't think as much so as those two. They're, you know, DJ and Rory are the only two guys on the tour with over 2.5 strokes gained per round. There's only four guys total with over two strokes gained per round, and it's JT, Rory, DJ, and Xander, which is interesting.
By the way, don't steal my expert pick here. The X-Man, baby.
Oh, that's my expert pick.
X-Man, baby. Let's go ahead and get in.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Last year he was T2, but like he always plays well at these big tournaments.
I know.
He does. Big game hunter. He loves, like, he's not flustered. You talk about a guy that can roll it pretty well. He doesn't make big mistakes off the tee. Which, again, we talk about this week, it might not be as crucial, but there's still water out there, and it doesn't matter if the rough's short if you find the agua. And he's just – I think there are so many guys I feel like that win a Players before they win that first major.
Mm.
And I think that's the step for Xander here. I think he's the best value out there. I think he's 25-1.
Yeah, he is. He's kind of like Mini Brooks,
mm-hmm.
Mini Koepka.
He just shows up at the big events and just beasts.
Yeah, I mean, he won HSBC Champions in the fall. He won Hawaii, which, you know, it's not a huge event, but
it was when Gary Woodland was killing it, chased him down.
Yeah.
It's a good field. Like, I mean, he's one of those dudes. And just, you know, I like him. I think probably, at 25-1, I just feel like he's just a really good value.
Well, and look at the company that he's keeping. So again, there's only four guys that are over one. I think it's over 1.9 strokes gained per round. Xander's at 2.2, JT's at 2.3, and DJ and Rory are at 2.5. And so... Yeah, like that's elite company to be, and it's not like we're two tournaments in. You know, we're a third of the way through the season. So
yeah, and it's also like, I mean, like he's got a track record. Like last year, he was just a top 10 machine at majors.
Right.
I think this is a spot where he could very easily break through. I was a little upset that Cabrera Bayo had to play as always did last week, because I always love a little RCB at like 60-1.
Yeah. Even though striking, he's never won. Even though he never wins.
He never wins. He's a I'll tell you this, RCB DFS hero.
Oh yeah.
DFS hero. When I used to do it for Sportsline, always.
Didn't he?
Because he's like $4,800.
Yeah. Didn't he make an albatross on 16 last year or something? 2 years ago?
I think so.
He finished like 3-2-3 or something. Just stupid. Like he seriously, he might have closed like 3-3-2-3 over the last four holes. I mean, it was nuts.
I love an RCB play. It never wins, but like I always have like something small in him at Augusta, like 100-1.
Because I'm like, if he gets it, gotta be there.
It's like Spanish Hideki for me. Like one of these days he's going to do it.
Spanish Hideki, that's great.
I mean, he's a ball striker. Few people hit it better than him. He doesn't putt great.
Who's your pick to win, Kyle?
Yeah.
My pick to win is JT.
Hmm. See, I've got JT and Xander both in this very simple, not very high-minded or deep analysis where I watched them play golf and I'm like, dude, he is sick.
Yeah.
And then he goes to the next hole and he has just stripes it. I'm like, dang, he is sick. And I just say that over and over again.
And I was kind of saying this going into, I think it was Cabrera Bayo finished 4-2-2-4 in 17. Which is, he went 2-2 on 16 and 17, which is, that'll never happen again, ever.
No.
I was saying this going into Riviera. It felt like 3 JT wins in his next 11 starts or whatever. And I feel like he should have won Riviera. He didn't play very well in the final round. And I, you know, I love him at like championship style courses where it's fast and it's firm and he can hit that, like, you know, 230 five iron to just 6 feet. Like, he's just so good from that distance. And so I'm a little bummed that it feels like it's playing a lot softer this year at Sawgrass. But he has a history here. He finished, I think, 4th in his debut a couple years ago. You know, I can't remember where he finished it at Honda. I think he finished like, you know, 25th or 30th or something like that. But other than that, he'd been playing great golf. You know, he had that run at 59 in Mexico where he said he started thinking about 59 at the turn, which is a lie because he's always thinking about 59. I don't know. He's on another level than I think most guys on tour right now.
I love when we have to pick winners for the a field like the Players or any major, it's pretty easy to talk yourself into a lot of them because they're the best players in the world. So like, who are y'all fading? Like, who's, when you are going through this process, and, you know, I guess for any listeners that might have the fantasy or the pool interests, like, who are those golfers that you know are at the top of the rankings and you know, high value players, but just ones that you don't like for whatever reason, one reason or another, their chances to win or really perform up to standard this week?
John Rahm.
Really?
You talk about the mental grind of Sawgrass. I think he has, like, if we're talking about to win, I would not come close to putting money on John Rahm. I think he's still got some steps to take in my mind, to being able to mentally handle the unfortunate things that are out of his control, where he hits a good shot and it ends up in a bunker and not melt down.
Right.
Like he always does. Like, he's still trying to dial that in. And look, when he's on, he's great. But I just think a course like Sawgrass is the type of place that's going to wear on him. And he's going to have a stretch on Saturday where he goes like bogey par double and just quick eject.
John,
it's the same reason I like last year, he showed me a lot at Augusta, but I think Sawgrass is a place where he's got to figure out. And I don't like him in that top tier. I think Rahm's the guy that just from a fading perspective, like he's the type of guy that just like one bad break at Sawgrass, and I think it can all just collapse on him.
What about you, Kyle?
I kind of want to fade DJ.
I don't hate that either. I also will never, I'll never be on this podcast picking one of the top guys.
By the way, how hard can I fade Phil?
Oh my God. What's a, let me look at the matchups here.
He's 60-1. He's going to miss the cut. I mean,
head to head against Patrick Reed.
By the way, would you like to lay minus 450 that he's not going to finish in the top 20? Can I put the mortgage on? just give a matchup. Cause like I love Phil matchups at like Augusta now, cause he's overvalued at Augusta every year.
It's it's a tough payout against Patrick Reed. Patrick Reed minus 135.
Oh, still lay it.
John Rahm, by the way, up against Bryson. Bryson at minus 105.
I'll take the delicate genius.
he hasn't been playing very bad. Well. How about Spieth is 50-1? When's the last time you saw Jordan Spieth 50-1?
So I'm saving my shekel on Spieth for Augusta.
Yeah.
I hope he continues to just look mediocre, and I want him coming into Augusta at like 40-1.
Yeah.
Where Robbie will be heavy on Jordan.
I almost feel like Spieth could hold his Augusta presser and be like, you know what? I'm playing terrible. I've decided to play left-handed, and he would be 20-1 to win the Masters.
Jordan Spieth has fallen to the point where his head-to-head for the Players has him as an underdog with a nice payout to Lucas Glover.
Oh my gosh. Are you serious?
+125 Jordan Spieth, Lucas Glover at -155.
Oh my gosh.
Jordan is 16-1 at Augusta. They will not budge. I want him to get to 20.
He might get there, but
I think he can get to 20.
I don't know, man. It hasn't been good, and I think the thing about Spieth is that, like, because, so, and we've talked about this a lot, all three of us probably, but because he's so, even when he's good, he's so slappy, and so, like, when he's bad, it just looks like horrendous.
It's brutal.
You're just like, how's this guy? And, like, I get it. Like, and the thing that kind of pisses me off that people forget is, like, he was number one on the PGA Tour in strokes gained on approach shots, like, 2 years ago. And people are like, oh, he's a great putter. His putting makes up for everything. No, he was, like, the best ball striker in the world 2 years ago. And that's the thing that the putting is, like, whatever. It'll come back. It'll go again. It's just, that is what it is. But the ball striking, and especially off the tee, has just been bad.
Yeah.
And so when he, you know, gets into these WGCs and there's not a cut, you're like, oh my gosh, he's going to shoot like 300 this week. I mean, it looks bad too, but I don't know. I'm still, if anybody wants to sell stock, I'll purchase it.
Just stills. What do you think? Robbie.
Yep.
Our man over here, KP, really feels a good Ian Poulter round coming up. Good real Ian Poulter tournament.
Yeah.
Okay.
How you feel?
Ball striker.
I want it. I need it.
Need it in your life?
Yeah. I go for like an Ian Poulter. How about an Ian Poulter Tiger weekend?
Hey, let's go.
Okay. Ryder Cup vibes.
That'd be amazing.
By the way, if you want to dial it in, Ian Poulter -105 versus Rafa Cabrera-Bello.
I don't like that matchup. But
I don't like it either. I love Rafa.
Poulter's four top sixes in his last five events.
Yeah.
Finished T2 here 2 years ago. I think he was top 12 last year. He's been playing some good golf, pretty quietly too, which is not how he does anything. So
no. Yeah, 50-1. Don't hate that.
What are some of the other sleepers that we like?
I'll start with a sleeper I don't like, and this is usually a guy that I'm just all over for everything as a sleeper because he's always 50-61, but he's just not playing well right now, and that's Usti. That hurts me deep inside my soul, but he's got some things to figure out. I'm not buying the Keith Mitchell run continuing here. At 100-1. Barnrat, 150-1. EK, where are you at?
He's listening right now.
I love I like Kisner 80-1, and I like Siwoo at 60.
Yeah.
I like both of those a lot.
Yeah. How's Noren been playing? Is he not? I haven't heard much from him.
No, he hasn't done much. How about Cam Champ at 150?
150? Cam Champ is he the new most boomer butt? We talk about who's got the highest floor. Who's got the biggest disparity between floor and ceiling?
He's been playing just not.
He shot like an 83 the other day?
Yeah, and the hard part for him is, and this is, I don't know, I get it if you're the PGA Tour, but they, like, he won an opposite field event. And all of a sudden, he's like the next Ricky Fowler, like in terms of promotion and marketing. And you're like, wow, he won one time in college. Like, are we doing this? Like, is this the road we're going down? Because I'd like to see a little bit more before we start pumping, you know, him on the feature groups and in the commercial. I don't know. I just,
you want to hear something kind of sad? I'd forgot who used the term, but they were definitely using it like in a joking manner. But, the term they've got just another live under par bot ready to step up into its place. When I think of a live under par bot, I think about Cameron Champ.
Yeah.
You know who I don't hate as a sleeper? I don't hate, like, I know he didn't play well last week at Bay Hill, especially on the weekend, but Keeks at 60-1 played well here last year. You know, one of those guys that, you know, when he's finding fairways, he's pretty good. And he's putting it way better this year.
What about Keimer at 150?
I'm out.
He's won here. He played pretty well a couple weeks ago.
Oh, you know, you can always talk me into a Bo Hostler play at 150-1. I love Bo Hostler.
There's some pretty intriguing names at 150-1, right?
There are.
Siwoo head to head against Matthew Wallace. Siwoo is plus 115.
Give me Siwoo.
Yeah, I'll take that for sure.
Yeah. I love how the bottom your four worst odds before you get to a field bet, which what? are Kevin Tway, Danny Willett, Masters legend, Eddie Pepperell, and the Duff. Not going well for Duffner right now.
No, it's not. He's not been playing well.
Really?
Spiraling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Disappointing.
They showed him last week at Bay Hill. They were like, look at this iron shot from Duffner. And I was like, oh, that's nice. And then they flashed like the graphic at the top, and it was like, plus six. I was like, oh. Oh, no, it's Friday. Like.
Robbie, any other bold predictions or expectations for the players?
Not really. I'll take Rose plus 250 to finish in the top 10.
Rose had one bad tournament recently, right? Miscut?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. But he's just, you know,
he's so solid.
He's just so solid. It's hard not to just be like, yeah, I'll buy.
Kyle, bold predictions?
I sort of already mentioned it, but it's just DJ. I would even go so far as to say DJ missing the cut. I know. And it sounds crazy, right? Because he's 23 under or whatever in Mexico. He's been playing great. But I don't know. There's something about Sawgrass. He hasn't played his best golf there. I don't know.
It sounds crazy. It sounds crazy because 12 minutes ago you told me DJ had the highest floor on tour.
No, I said Rory.
Okay.
No, that was me.
Right, Rory.
Yeah.
Well,
right,
best of luck to DJ because, you know, someone's got to put those lips in, right? You need four rounds for it.
He'll probably win by like nine.
Yeah. just walk away with this in Webb Simpson style, running away. So,
my top five, we had to do this for CBSSports.com, give our top five. I said in order, and it's always hilarious because you're like, wow, if it plays out like this, this is going to be absolutely just insane. But I had JT, Fleetwood, Xander, Poulter, Rory. It'd be pretty fun.
That'd be delightful.
Yeah, it'd be pretty great.
I had Xander, Rory, JT, DJ, Fleetwood.
Fleetwood is like just lurking. Like he's going to win one of these, I think. And then we're going to be like, oh yeah, he's sick. Like he's unbelievable.
He's nasty.
Yeah.
Dude just hits the ball perfect every time.
And I feel like he's another guy that I feel like is sort of negatively affected by soft and slow that would be helped by firm and fast because we see this at US Opens. He's just, you know, filthy from like 250, 240, just these distances that he can shape it. He can hold it. And I'm bummed that we don't, you know, we're not going to get as much of that in a week like this as we normally would.
Yeah. I'm going to say that this is another one in line with the one of these things is not like the other Fleetwood tournament performance. where he's going to rail off like 65, 66, 67, 73. But the 73 might be on Saturday or Friday. You never know when it's coming.
Yeah, last week he was like 67, 68, 76, 68. And you're like, wait, what?
I'm gonna give Fleetwood this. I'm gonna assume that the Fleetwood play is gonna be in the cards again for the Masters, and then maybe when we get out to Pebble for the U.S. Open, Fleetwood has his breakthrough moment. But I don't think it's here at the Players.
I'd love to see him win Pebble. That would be awesome.
Be awesome. We'll be back, obviously, to preview all of the majors, including this one, the fifth major. much love to the PGA Tour for everything they do and for TPC Sawgrass. That's Robbie Callant. You can follow him on Twitter at rcallant. You can follow him at KylePorterCBS. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thanks, Chip.
Thanks, bud.